Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 57. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh, well, he went and saw Twilight this weekend, and rather than face humanity ever again, he decided to immerse himself in the world of Banjo-Kazooie.
Smart man.
Actually, he's sick. Feel better, sir.
Yeah, feel better, buddy.
Yeah, but still. Okay. should we talk about what we watched this week?
Yes.
I didn't watch a whole heck of a lot. We're not going to do The Fisher King this week because Dave only got halfway through it because it was a bad week.
Mm.
Should I tell the drama real quick?
Yeah, sure. Let's get some drama.
So we did the show Sunday. Monday night went and saw Slumdog Millionaire. We'll be getting to that actually in our main topic this week. But on the drive back from Denver, my car died. Now, usually people say, my car died, the battery went out, air filter got clogged. No, my engine is dead. Which meant Dave didn't get home till about 1 o'clock in the morning and found out that Tuesday. And yeah, it's not been the best week, but oh well, it's turned out a lot better than it could have been.
Thank God, man. What a nightmare you had to go through.
Certain things that were very much in jeopardy to almost a certainty to not happening are now back on track.
I called you when I was at the Denver Film Fest. What was it, Monday night? Oh God, I felt so bad. It sounded so miserable, man.
Oh, it was Tuesday. No, it was Tuesday night.
Oh, Tuesday. That's right. That's when it all hit the fan. That's
right. Tuesday was not a good day. Yeah. But because of that, saw Slumdog. I'm trying to think if I watched much of anything else. Oh, Netflix. The new Xbox experience has hit on Xbox 360, which means if you are a gold subscriber, you pay the $50 a year or whatever for their live service, and you have a Netflix account, you can stream movies through your Xbox. And so we started off by watching a 4-hour documentary by Ken Burns on Mark Twain.
Oh, fantastic.
And it was really good. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was actually watching The Fisher King on Netflix, but unfortunately, now here's a funny thing. Columbia Pictures, which happens to be owned by Sony, they don't have a competing product to the 360 or anything. Yeah, for some reason, you can't stream their movies over the 360.
Mm. Interesting.
Suck. They all suck.
That's too bad. Fisher King's one of the great ones.
Yeah, but I'm loving it so far. Good, so, good. Yeah, we're going to talk about it next week because we are doing a show next week, even with it being Thanksgiving. I think we're all in town. So.
Oh, yeah, we're here.
Yeah. What did you see, sir?
I saw Synecdoche, New York, the Charlie Kaufman movie.
Yes, Nate saw it and said it was great.
I really loved it. And I understand why people don't love it. It's on one hand, it's in terms of it being challenging and daring and weird and difficult, it's not on the level of Southland Tales, where there really is no interpretation other than your own. I really believe that Kaufman is onto something. I think there is a way of decoding, if you will. But in terms of it being a movie about really one of the ultimate films about the theatrical experience, how actors need understudies and how they need to embody other people and they have people to embody them when they're not around and what it means to be alive even. I thought it was a great film. It's definitely one of my favorites of the year, but I understand people who give up on it. Julia was quite the trooper. It wasn't until the last 20 minutes of a very long 2 hours that she finally said, I give up. But even for the most part, she really liked the film too. But I know Marty didn't like it either. For the same reason, Marty and Julia, they kind of gave up after the last 20 minutes are so bizarre. And okay. It doesn't even try to explain itself, and it really is kind of open to how you feel about it. But I thought the whole thing was just a really dazzling movie.
Very cool. So I've heard many good things. I want to see it.
Yeah, I do recommend it. I think it is coming to the springs eventually.
Okay. Yeah, and I think the Boy with the Striped Pajamas actually opened out here.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Yeah, yeah. Who would have thought we'd get that?
Yeah, I might have to see that. I don't know. Yeah.
And then the other one I saw, just because. Not the one you're thinking of. I'll get to that in a second. Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that. No, I saw the original My Bloody Valentine.
How is that? That's right. You got a hold of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's dreadful. It's absolutely dreadful. My favorite part of the movie, because the film is so terrible. After 5 minutes, I'm like, I really should just hit stop and not even try. But even though I love like 80s slasher movies, I do. But this was really, really bad. I mean, this is it's like Sleepaway Camp, terrible. But the part of the movie that just killed me, because it's about this guy who was a coal miner. He died. And he comes back and kills people who party on Valentine's Day. That's the gist of the movie, Dave. And his name is Warren Hardin. Talk about the unscariest guy. It's Harry Warden. I'm sorry, Harry Warden. That's the name of the guy, Harry Warden. Talk about the unscariest boogeyman name. So Harry Warden comes back every Valentine's Day to this town and kills people if they party on Valentine's night. And so it's this stupid group of teenagers who are let's party, woo, Valentine's Day, even though the whole town knows about this legend. So the part that killed me, Dave, is they're at a, they get to this like secluded place to party, and the teenagers walk in like, woo, party. And what does one guy start to do? Juggle. He starts to he's like, woo, yeah, party. And he's juggling.
Because that's what they do to party in the 80s.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's the sign of a real party animal right there, a guy who just can't contain himself. He just has to burst out into spontaneous juggling.
See, actually, there's something else I watched. I started watching the first season of Mythbusters this week, too. And you had one of the guys, like, juggling breast implants. So that's kind of entertaining.
Wow.
But just juggling.
You don't see that every day.
No, you don't. No, yeah. No. So, wow, so that bad, huh?
Yeah, it's really, really terrible. And in fact, it makes me excited for the remake, because really, the remake could only go up.
So this is one of those things where, okay, so this is one of those.
Yes. It's like, for me, it's like how I feel about Friday the 13th. It's like, they can't, they have to top the original. They have to, because the original, you know, it has classic status, but it's not a classic movie. It really isn't.
There you go. And do you want to go on your rant now?
We'll wait till we talk about what came out this weekend.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, yeah, I'll save it for then, but no, believe me,
dude, you really hated Bolt, didn't you?
Freaking love Bolt. It's just the other movie, but yeah.
Did you see Bond yet?
I'm gonna see that today, actually.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to know what you think of the Star Trek trailer, because yes. I downloaded it on Xbox, and my wife is a huge Trekkie, and I was like, this looks so awful. Then I showed her the trailer, and she's like, or not. It looks kind of interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to see what you think. All right, well then let's talk about what hit theaters this week.
Oh boy, well this will be fun. On one hand, a movie that really should have done so much better, the new Disney film Bolt, which I gotta say, great movie. This is John Travolta and Miley Cyrus, among others, doing the voices. And then the film that made $70 million over the weekend. Boy, does that piss me off. Pardon my French. Twilight. Oh man.
Before we get to Twilight, let's talk a little Bolt here.
Okay.
Do you think it didn't do as well because it doesn't have the Pixar pedigree and you had the Hannah Montana factor?
I think it did pretty well considering its competition, because it was, you know, even without Twilight, it was going up against Bond in its second weekend. And Bond and Bolt actually made the same amount. I think they both made $27 million over the week.
Yeah, I think Quantum of Solace barely beat it out. But still, if this was a Pixar movie...
Yeah, I think, yeah, if a Pixar movie, and if it was released during the summertime, I think Bolt is going to do fine over the rest of the season, because it doesn't have any like major, major kiddie competition up against it. And it is such a quality film. I really think it'll do well. Even Enchanted didn't open up all that big a year ago, but Enchanted, you know, the word of mouth carried. And I think the same thing will happen with Bolt, because it is that good, I think.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I want to see it. Just life gets in the way sometimes. Okay. So Twilight.
Well,
I was loaded for, was it last week or the week before? I forget what I was going on a rant.
It was the week before, I think. Yeah. And that's when I was like, Dave, come on. Wait till you see the movie, boy. Boy, am I eating my words now.
Now we got Twilight.
Yeah. Twilight. What to say about Twilight? I'll tell you what I like.
Should I get the bleep button ready?
No. I'll tell you what I liked about it. There's a scene in the movie where Edward the vampire and Kristen Stewart, her character, Bella, excuse me, I know the names, I don't know why. Anyway, they're in a tree, and the camera circles them, and they're really, really high up there. I think it was a CGI effect, but it looks really good. That's what I liked about the movie. What did I not like about the movie? Everything else. The performances are dreadful. Everybody's like, you know, you should read the book first, because the book would really help me like the movie. Well, movies and books, completely different entities. You don't, you know, one can exist without the other. Da Vinci Code is always going to be a good book, terrible movie. And Lord of the Rings is always going to be a fantastic masterpiece of a book and a great movie.
Yeah. Not so much here.
I'm willing to go along that Stephanie Myers really wanted to just put forth the idea that these vampires... It's not even about vampires. It's about young people, about young angst and young puppy love and longing and the first time you fall in love. I mean, I'm willing to go with that.
With a 90-year-old. Sorry.
I'm willing to go in that direction. I am. I'm fine. Play down the fact that it's about vampirism. You know, play up the fact that it's about 13-year-old girl longing. That's fine. There's no attraction or chemistry or anything between these two leads. The lead, Robert Pattinson. With his huge hair and his sideburns.
It accentuates his huge head.
And his,
I'm sorry, but
and his squinty eyes and the way he pounces and mumbles all his lines. He's like an undead Luke Perry. And then Kristen Stewart, all of her lines, she gives in the same dead monotone throughout the whole movie, except for the few moments where she's shouting. The rest of the cast overacts like they're on an episode of Saved by the Bell. The special effects are
dreadful. Does someone sing I'm So Excited?
That would have helped.
Okay.
The special effects are so dreadful, Dave. Like, whenever they're, you know, the vampires are very fast, it's clearly all they did was speed up the footage. I mean, it's so cheesy. It's like watching one of those Benny Hill videos.
So like, okay, let's go to a paragon of awful effects here. Steel.
Slightly better than Steel.
Okay.
Yeah, like what? Like two notches above Steel. You know what's shocking, though? The end credits rolled, and it said Industrial Light and Magic. I don't know. I don't know what happened, Dave. I really don't, because these special effects are some of the worst of the year. It's clear that they are all on wires, because when you fly, you don't usually wobble around like that. I mean, from all my experience of flying. But seriously, these effects are dreadful. Just dreadful. The music by Carter Burwell is a total snooze. What else? The direction? Like, I never knew what this movie wanted to be. I mean, parts of it are trying to be funny, and it's just painfully cheesy. The parts that are trying to be serious and intense are just corny and boring. It's an ugly movie. It was shot in this blue tint that makes the whole movie look like it's overcast, even when they're indoors. I can't think of anything to say about this movie that I liked. I can. Vampire baseball. I don't think there's a worse scene all year than the scene where the vampires play baseball. You know, and it's a fine idea. Vampires, they're old. They love, you know, the all-American sport. Well, they dress up in, like, you know, 1920s baseball fatigue, and they're all playing baseball in fast motion set to a thunderstorm. It really is one of the corniest things I think I've ever seen. And it's a film killer for me. I think that was at the point where I'm like, this really is one of the worst films of the year. It is so terrible.
See, now I have to see it. Well, and on top of the fact that the other negative reviews, I haven't read any positive ones, but the other negative reviews have all said that even the fans, that they saw these in packed houses, and even the fans were laughing at this movie. And so for that, in that respect, my condolences to the Twilight fan base.
There was some snickering at the theater I was at. But I do want to say one last thing, and that is, everybody keeps saying, you know, oh, this, you know, 13-year-old girls are going to love this movie. This is a movie for 13-year-old girls. 13-year-old girls are going to just love, eat up this movie. What an insult to 13-year-old girls. What an insult. Seriously. I remember my 13-year-old female friends when I was in junior high, and they certainly had more taste and intelligence than to see something this bad. I mean, this is really, really, really bad. And what an insult that 13-year-old girls would love this. 13-year-old girls should be seeing Bolt or all the other great movies that are out there right now.
So when it comes down to it,
I didn't think it was physically possible, but this both sucks and blows.
Is that about?
I couldn't have said it better.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping it hits the dollar theater in a hurry.
Well, probably not with a $70 million opening. It might be maybe around,
well, here's the thing.
Maybe by Valentine's Day, maybe.
You had all the fans go see it this weekend. If it's had this bad of a reaction, it might drop like a rock.
Yeah, but that's the thing of it, though, Dave. I mean, even if it loses 50% of its audience, that's still what?
35.
Yeah, that's still the number one movie of next week. Because what's opening next week? Let me just sneak a peek.
Is there anything worth? Don't mention it, because, you know, we got to get to that spot.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I can't see any of these movies opening at the number one spot. I really can't.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and some of these are good movies that I've seen, but I can't see any of those opening at number one. So I think Twilight and Bolt are probably going to get it next week too. But, you know, with hopefully Bolt will hang in there and Twilight will just drop. But
so is this a movie that's going to be like, hey, everyone's going to say, yeah, the book's better? Like, can you see many of the fans really trying to defend this movie?
The book couldn't possibly be worse. And if it was, there's no way they would have made the movie. There's no way this would have happened.
Okay, then.
Okay, here's another thing. Here's what breaks my heart. This is Catherine Hardwicke.
I told you this. 13.
Director of 13, The Nativity Stories. She's got a niche. She makes movies about young women coming of age. She knows how to do it. What the heck happened here? What the heck happened?
No, sir, I don't like it.
Okay, enough of the... Since we're not recording live this week, Dave gets to play with the soundboard. Hey, so sorry about that. Okay, well, shall we move on to DVDs this week?
Yes.
You know, we usually try to come up with a crap title of the week. We don't need to this week. The titles we have to mention are...
Yeah, some of these are stinkers. Yeah. I'll go with the best. Criterion Collection, they're releasing Bottle Rocket, Wes Anderson's first film. I love this movie. Great film, Criterion. Buy it. The rest, you know, I did find one good one, because I did want to come up with another good one. Great film, I think from 1972, one of the great Boy and His Dog movies called Sounder. Really good movie.
Oh, that's an awesome movie.
Yeah,
I love that movie.
Good, good. Yes. I'm glad you've seen it. Good. Yeah, well, anyway, I saw that. I'm like, oh, I got to mention that. Because the rest of it, what do we got? We got Meet Dave.
Oh.
We've got Fred Claus. Space Chimps. And then not a terrible movie, but I thought one of the most disappointing movies of the summer, Hancock, available in the one disc and the two disc unrated version.
Yeah, the one thing I will say about Hancock, or Fist Wiener, you know, since Josh isn't here, I have to say it for him. The fact that they're making a point of releasing the unrated cut in a single disc as well as the two disc, I kind of like that. I think that's Peter Berg really trying to push what the original vision of the film was. And I'm hoping it's better than what we got in theaters.
Yeah, me too. I would be curious to see that, because as I told you, walking out of it, I felt that it felt like so much missing. I felt like I watched a highlight reel instead of a real movie.
Fair enough. So. Cool.
Yeah.
Is that it?
That's it for this week.
Okay, then. Well, then let's move on to some news.
Okay.
Let's see here. Speaking of Old Boy, might as well just start off right there. Apparently, it's a remake, but not like we think. They're going to base it off the Japanese manga. I'm sorry, it's a Japanese
manga
that was translated to the Korean culture. So they're like, don't freak out. We're not doing it off the movie. We're doing it off the book. It's a little problem with that, though. I had the 3-disc, like, Uber Tin that Tartan put out, and it came with the first volume of the manga. Not a whole lot different from the movie.
Mm.
So,
are there any specific differences you can think of?
Not really.
Mm.
Nothing, like, you know, earth-shattering to the story.
And they thought this would sway all the Old Boy fans.
No. I'm sure a lot of the Old Boy fans haven't read the manga, so they have no idea what's actually there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now you know.
It's still Steven Spielberg and Will Smith taking on a story that has no need for a remake. And yeah, the original is still a classic. I don't know that
culture can make it can't make the jump culturally. No. I still stand by that.
You got to water it down. You have to. And that's like you said, always say that that's not Old Boy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like trying to do, like, remake Battle Royale as Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, yeah. And I know they've been trying to for years, and hopefully that'll never, ever, ever get made.
And just for, you know, Barry, since it'll make you happy now, seeing as you suffered through it this weekend, there's a Twilight sequel coming.
Oh, God. Already?
I don't know what the next book is called.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Twilight fans who are listening, but I think it's called New Moon. I believe that's the title.
I've heard about what happens in the third book, and if they get to that, I have to see it just because of how out there it is. I'll put it that way. I don't want to insult anyone, but it sounds so out there. That have you heard about what?
Yeah, okay. I've heard. I hope they get a, you know what? Maybe somebody said that they thought this is going to be like Harry Potter. We're just going to get better with every movie.
Well, it can't go much worse.
Well, yeah, yeah.
You're hoping.
I don't know, Dave. It's like, you know, at this point, even a mediocre movie would be a step up from Twilight.
Ooh.
So I'm sorry. Okay. I can't bottle it. You know me. I've been in this movie's corner. I've been saying, well, it can't be that bad. It's got a great director, a good cast. Yeah, well,
that's all.
I got screwed. 2 hours and $8 of my life gone. Gone. I didn't say that about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I didn't even say that about Hancock, but I'm saying that about this movie.
Dang. Okay. All right, then. Well, let's move on to some other news. Okay. Let's just do the other story and then do all the trailers that came out.
Yeah.
Apparently, we may be getting an actor strike after all.
Mm.
Apparently, if you were to believe the press release that came out from the Actors Association, whatever they're called, the Film Actors Guild, or I'm sorry, Screen Actors Guild, went Team America there. Sorry.
SAG. It's SAG.
Dude. I know. I had to go there. But they've been saying that apparently the new media stuff, like online distribution and all that stuff, the monies have not been transferred like the studios had agreed to, which is apparently why they're looking to push it so bad. So, okay, we'll see what happens.
That's troubling. That's really troubling. That's going to halt a lot of productions.
If
it's going to be like another deal with the writer's strike, that's very troubling.
Yes, most definitely. Let's move on to trailers, though. Have you seen the new Benjamin Button trailer?
No. How is it?
It's not a whole lot different from the other one, but it still looks so good.
I'm trying not to look at them, just because I'm going to be seeing the film soon, and I'm trying to, you know,
stay a spoiler free as possible.
Yeah, keep the slate clean. Yeah, I'm really excited about him.
Fair enough. Yeah, I liked it a lot. Let's see. Do we not? I guess we should talk about the Black Dynamite trailer.
Absolutely, yeah. Ain't that's it cool a great put trailer.
This
up?
And oh my gosh, it is hilarious. I don't know what to think about this. Really, it's Michael Jai White, as Black Dynamite, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Mike Starr is the bad guy, and it looks like Michael T. Williamson from Forrest Gump is, I guess, one of the pimp bad guys in there. And yeah, it looks great.
It looks so. It
looks like so much fun.
Wow. Yeah, it's like Grindhouse doing blaxploitation meets yeah. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker. Or,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. The whole thing about don't wake up the. Yeah. it's something to be seen, to be believed. If you listen to the show at work, do not watch this trailer at work. Definitely not safe for there.
Yes.
There's content there. Let's see. The Wrestler got a trailer, and it's a pretty darn good trailer. It uses the Bruce Springsteen song in it.
Cool.
And yeah, it's pretty good. It hits a lot of the emotional highlights of the film, but it still doesn't tell you everything that happens.
Oh, good. So they don't like show the final scene in it.
No. Well, they kind of show a little bit of it.
Okay.
But you can't tell that it is.
Good.
It's just really well done. Very cool stuff. Let's see. Oh, the Adventureland trailer came out.
Yeah, that was good.
That looks really good. Like, and for you to say that after having seen Twilight, especially since Kristen Stewart is in Adventureland, that's saying something.
I know she can act. Even in a movie as subpar as The Messengers, she showed that she can act. And so I like her as an actress. I liked her a lot in Panic Room. And of course, Into the Wild. But... Yeah. I'm sure she'll be fine in Adventureland. I hope she'll be fine.
It looks like a lot of fun. Bill Hader looks really good in it. It's been described more as Garden State than Superbad, which really intrigues me in a way that I want to see it.
Yeah, and like I was telling you, I love that it's set during the summer of 1987. That was one of the most pivotal summers of my life, so I love that, you know, this is another one of those summer that changed my life movies.
Very cool, sir. Right on. Well, I guess that's about all I got going right now. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In a world where knowledge is power, in an age where time is the most valuable commodity, in a voice that's killing my throat, comes a podcast that will bring you wisdom in less than 1 minute a day. So join me, Martin Darkley, as we journey to enlightenment. Our teachers, classic lines from cinema history. Come then to moviemantras.com and begin a voyage to a higher state.
Hi. This is Nichelle Nichols, and when I'm in this quadrant, I tune in to Screen Geeks Radio. You should too.
I get goosebumps every time I play that thing.
Thanks, Nichelle.
Yes, and thank you to Martin Darkley. I'll have it noted that his commercial is actually longer than his podcast, which is awesome. I love that. It's a really fun show, well worth checking out. And it's like a minute. It comes out twice a week. Ooh, yeah. Check it out.
Very cool.
So since Dave slacked and didn't get his homework done, what are we talking about this week, sir?
We're going to talk about the 31st Denver International Film Festival. It took place in Denver from, that was November 13th all the way through November 23rd today.
So we were up there for the 14th.
Yes, that's right. We were there, the first, I shouldn't say the
second evening.
Yeah, the second evening. Yeah. Very eventful. I must say. yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Very interesting experiences. So you went to a heck of a lot more stuff than I did. So
I did, and thanks to the good people at the Denver Film Society, I managed to get some screeners and catch up and get to see some stuff beforehand.
What were the two ladies who we worked with?
The group rather is it's Keith Garcia, Alexis, Rachel, and Elizabeth. So big thank you to
now. Do they work with the actual Film Society?
Yes.
Okay, so they're actually volunteers who just helped put this thing together. And
I don't know if they're volunteers. They're sure working hard over there.
Fair enough.
Or they're paying them. I really don't know.
They work with the Denver Film Society.
Yes.
Though, yeah, which is really cool. The Denver Film Society actually runs a theater in Denver.
Yep, the Tivoli,
as well as hosting this festival every year, mm-hmm. which is extremely cool for a film society to do that.
Yeah. And everybody there, so nice, so accommodating, did a fantastic job, made me feel incredibly welcome, really just helped me through the process, and I got to see some fantastic movies. Not as many as I wanted. The program lists 150 movies, at least I counted 150 movies, I heard somebody say that there were actually 200 if you count all the short films that were shown. I saw 30, so I didn't see that many, really.
Fair enough. Did you get to see Chocolate after all?
I did not, no. Oh, I did not get to see Chocolate. Yeah. The screener copy was a bust. But you know, it's coming out, I think, in the next couple months in theaters. So.
Okay.
I think like February or March. So.
Just so people aren't in the dark, what's Chocolate about? Because once you hear what this is, you'll know why I'm like, I want to see this.
Yeah. Apparently, it's like a female Tony Jaa movie, in a sense. The lead actress, according to the press notes, she spent 5 years preparing for a role in which she plays an autistic woman who is a kung fu kicker. The trailer on YouTube is extraordinary. It looks amazing. It looks like seriously, like Ong Bak quality, right?
Only it sounds again. Like there's actually going to be more story.
Yeah.
Because a Tony Jaa movie is great, but it's essentially a video game.
Right.
Let's beat the next boss. But it's fun to watch, don't
you know? Yeah, it's amazing that he's actually doing all that stuff. And Chocolate looks really incredible. So.
Very cool. All right, I'll quit butting in now.
No. Well, let's talk about the stuff that we both saw. Do you want to start with Slumdog?
Yeah, we talked about Wrestler. Well, do you want to expand any more on what you thought about The Wrestler?
I'll just say I really like the film. I think it's very good. I don't like it better than Requiem for a Dream, but I like it for the same reason you did. It doesn't look or feel like anything Aronofsky has done. I mean, granted, we're only four movies into his filmography, but for Pete's sake, this guy has, with every film, a completely different style and look and feel. I don't know if Mickey Rourke's performance was the best of the year, but I was very impressed by it, and I thought his performance was so soulful, and it certainly carried the movie, and I loved the supporting roles by Marissa Tomei and Rachel Wood. You're laughing.
For an entirely different reason. We're leaving it alone.
Hey, Marissa Tomei is cute. But yeah, I really like The Wrestler. I was very pleased. I didn't know what to expect because I hadn't seen any footage or anything, but I thought it was a fine film, very passionate.
Yeah, the more I thought about it, I really dig this movie. It's almost definitely going to be my top 10, but this is actually not going to be my number one movie, which is kind of interesting. I'm not going to ruin what it is, but...
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's a tough film. It really is. Like I've told you, I mean, those scenes in The Ring are as brutal as any of the scenes in Requiem for a Dream. Yeah. It's funny to think like the Fountain is like his most touchy feely audience friendly movie. It's kind of ironic.
It's very true though.
Yeah.
All right. Now Slumdog.
Slumdog, yeah.
It screened on Saturday night, last Saturday night, but neither of us went. We went and saw it at different times.
Yes.
I'll let you start. Because I know you haven't had quite the same positive reaction that's been
across the board. In fact, I'm not sure if I even like the film, to tell you the truth. I'll tell you exactly my take on it. And I swear this is okay, I'm trying to be even-handed about this because I know everybody's in love with this movie, and I understand that it's definitely a crowd pleaser, a film. It really is. Honestly, all the way through the movie, I found the story very fascinating. I was always glued, and the movie is certainly not boring at any point. The end credits roll. I'm thinking, man, this is an incredible story, and then it's just based on a novel, and I was crushed.
Oh, you thought it was based on a true story?
I thought it was a true story because the story is so incredible. I honestly thought this has to be a true story. But knowing that somebody sat down and wrote a story about this kid who, minor spoilers, has escaped the most horrific, horrific lifestyle. This kid has gone through child slavery, escaped sexual slavery, has escaped the absolute dregs of poverty and a horrific, horrific upbringing through being on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I find that very cynical and offensive.
Okay.
That ticks me off. If it was one thing if this was a true story, but knowing that somebody was writing this story and like, yes, we'll end it with, he goes on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And to me, it's like, imagine if Oliver Twist can escape like Fagin and a life of poverty and all the horrible things that happen to Oliver Twist by like going on Wheel of Fortune. For me, that's how I feel.
Okay.
Clearly, I'm alone here.
No, that's okay. I was like, as soon as I heard what the premise was, I'm like, there's no way this is real. It's just, no. So I looked at the use of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as a device for the storytelling. In that respect, I love the film. I freaking adore this movie. Knowing that, I can understand the disappointment now that you had. I don't know. I didn't think it was that cynical because really he had escaped that life before he even got to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'm not going to say how, blah, blah, blah. He wasn't living it up, but he had a life that was, you know, common to a lot of people. You know, you're just working, getting through the day, and then you go home. He had a lot rougher upbringing for sure. And what I liked about the movie is the fact that no one escapes this film without emotional or physical scars, sometimes both. But it doesn't affect anything. I thought it was a very positive movie, a very life-affirming movie overall. The parts in the Taj Mahal were freaking hilarious. The gross-out gag of the movie, I could not stop laughing. The entire theater was just dying, that entire scene. Like, I was half gagging, half laughing, because it's so gross. But he's a devoted fan. You know? What do you say? I'm just going to leave that alone, because I'm not going to ruin that for anybody. What I liked about the movie was because the movie ended up being not even at all about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. I'm not going to say how the movie ends. I will say by the end, when it comes time to him for him to answer that final question, to me, the success of the film did not hinge on whether he answered that question right or not even. It didn't even matter. At that point, the movie had been over. So I liked that fact about it. The performances were great. The cinematography was great. Mm-hmm. I hate Bollywood music, but I love that soundtrack.
Did you like the end credit sequence?
Yeah. Yeah, I just sat there with Nate, our buddy in film school, and we just kind of sat there going, holy crap. But if you'd gone into it thinking it was a real movie, I could see everything crashing down at that moment. Totally.
Yeah, and maybe I just went over the wrong expectations. I definitely was not prepared for how intense and brutal it was. But
it wasn't as brutal as you led me to believe it. It definitely earns its R rating, mm-hmm. but we're not talking about a hard R, I don't think, by a long shot.
No, I don't think so either.
Anyone who's old enough to go to an R movie, I'm comfortable with recommending it because it's, as I said in my review, you can't have human triumph without having some human trials.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are very sad. The whole thing with his brother was heartbreaking. Although that if I did have one critique, it's how his brother left the film. It was pretty cheesy, I thought.
Mm.
I'm not going to ruin it, but yeah. Overall, I loved it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, well, I appreciate your passionate review. It was very good.
Yeah, but, at the same time, this isn't like the best movie in 10 years, and I don't know. But it's good. I love
it. That's what the critics are saying. Yeah. People are loving this film.
Yeah, and I love it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, as soon as it hits in theaters down here again, if it hits theaters down here, I'll go see it again.
I'm sure it will. It seems like at this point, it certainly is not even close to being the same kind of movie as Juno, but it certainly is playing that kind of crossover appeal.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it's a better film than Juno, mm. honestly. And I like Juno. Just didn't think it deserved to be up for Best Picture last year.
Mm.
So, yeah.
This one, do you think it should deserve a shot? Because they say it looks like one of the front runners.
I'm not sure. I wouldn't be disappointed if it got nominated. Or even, I don't even know if it won, but it's not something I can necessarily argue tooth and nail about.
Mm.
I mean, I've said before, if there was ever a movie I could take off of one of my top 10 year end lists, it would have been Little Miss Sunshine. Just because it hasn't held up that well, mm-hmm. I don't think.
Yeah.
A lot of it was the hype, and usually when I look at an indie movie, and this is really an independent film, I always compare it to that. I'm like, is this something that's just being overhyped, and I'm just going to end up really not liking when I look at it in retrospect? And I don't. It hasn't been the case so far. I'll put it that way.
Cool.
So, all right, what else did you see? Now we've had our Slumdog discussion.
I'll just
made that our topic by itself.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to go over the list of some films and certainly give a shout-out to some of these fantastic directors, some of which were nice enough to talk to us. My favorite film of the fest, honestly, I shouldn't have favorites, but I just love this movie so much. It's called Not Your Typical Bigfoot Movie. It's directed by Jay Delaney. It's only about 65 minutes long. I know it sounds silly, but it's about these two guys in search of Bigfoot. They're both kind of old. One is very eccentric. One is a self-professed loser. They don't have a lot going for each other except for one another and their friendship and their drive to find Bigfoot. I found this film to be incredibly moving, very funny, incredibly revealing. These guys, these two subjects were so open to the camera. I thought it was just perfect. Even the length at 65 minutes, I'm like, yeah, this movie just said everything it has to say. I thought it was just a perfect film. I loved not your typical Bigfoot movie directed by James.
When we were up there on Friday night, everyone you talk to, what have you liked? Oh, you have to see this.
Yeah. Well, honestly, because seriously, man, I've drank the Kool-Aid, because I didn't think this would, honestly, I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting something like this. It's a lot like the documentary American Movie. It has that kind of feel. It's very gentle. It's very funny. Yeah. So love that one. I also loved Bill Plimpton's Idiots and Angels, his new animated film. Very good.
He's still making movies, huh?
He is, and it's very, it's good stuff. One that you and I saw, we could talk about this, Spine Tingler, the William Castle story.
I talked briefly about it last week.
We did, yeah. Great documentary about William Castle by Jeffrey Schwartz. I thought it was a fine film.
Yes.
James Gray's new film, Two Lovers, which is apparently going to be the last film that Joaquin Phoenix ever does, if he indeed does retire. It's Joaquin Phoenix and Gwyneth Paltrow and Vanessa Shaw. Great film. Great film. I really loved it. It's very elegant, very moody, very dark. It has the feel of a thriller, even though it's a romantic drama. This is from the director of We Own the Night, and it has a very similar feel to it, and really terrific performance by Phoenix. I really like this film.
Very cool. Just as a quick aside, what do you think of that announcement?
Well, we'll see.
Okay.
You know, we've had a lot of... Cher has retired like 5 times and come back. As far as like actors, I've heard Anthony Hopkins say he was never going to act again, and then he comes back with Bad Company of all things. So you never know.
Fair enough.
You never know. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
At least we know he can sing better than Bruno and Eddie Murphy. He's proven that in Walk the Line.
So. This is true. This is very true. Garrison Keillor, the man in the red shoes on the radio.
Man on the radio in the red shoes.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you. Shame on me. I saw it 2 weeks ago. I'm still getting it.
I'm so bummed. I want to see this.
I love this film. A very engaging film directed by Peter Rosen. Wonderful film. Very revealing. It's got some fantastic candid stuff with Garrison Keillor as he's doing his radio show, Prairie Home Companion. Some really wonderful stuff. Keillor, you know, is known to be kind of a hermetically sealed individual, and somehow Rosen managed to get in there and get some really wonderful footage of him, him hanging out with Robert Altman, him hanging out with his people. It's just a really wonderful film.
Very cool. And we have an interview with him. I'm not sure when we're running it.
Hopefully very soon.
Okay. And, sure. We're not sure if they want us to do it now or wait until a little closer to July when the film actually shows on PBS.
Yeah. Or... Yeah. I'll definitely shoot him an email. And we'll find out. But yeah, as soon as we can get that up, we'll definitely put that up.
Absolutely.
Great. Yeah. And thank you so much, Peter Rosen, for talking with us. Not Quite Hollywood, fantastic documentary about the Australian exploitation films of the last 40 years. You would love this, Dave. It's like, I mean, it really
sounds awesome.
It's so great. It's basically about how these exploitation films were kind of a counterculture movement when they first started to come up. And but over time, they became better and better and better. And certainly, you know, one of the biggest fans of these films, Quentin Tarantino, is one of the main talking heads in the documentary. And some of these films I've actually seen. And they give a shout out to the late Richard Franklin, one of my favorite directors. They talk about movies like, I'm like, man, this movie Snapshot. What is this movie? I'd love to see this. They talk about Mad Max. They talk about Dead End Driving. I mean, it's just a fun movie. Really solid documentary. Slingshot Hip Hop, great documentary directed by Jackie Reem Salom. Hope I said that right. This is about a Palestinian rap artist and how it's basically very, very optimistic and hopeful about rap music in a way I haven't seen in years, about how rap music can really bring people together and be a force of unification as opposed to people separating or even rap music being used in commercial means. This is it basically as a personal expression. And I thought it was very moving, very inspiring. Great film. Slingshot Hip Hop. I want to give a thank you to Ari Lehman, who talked to us when he was promoting his film. His name is Jason, which we talked about, directed by Daniel Ferrans. Great film. Apparently that's going to be on DVD in February to
And we were the first ones to have a review up. And
yay!
Apparently
fantastic.
Both Stars and Anchor Bay have been very happy with that review, which is always a good thing. Yes.
Great. Hey, if you guys want to put it on their DVD box.
Whatever.
Please, by all means. We'll prostitute our name. We're only too happy to. Yeah, but thank you, Ari Lehman, the original, the first Jason, who was very kind to talk to us in a very animated and very wild interview.
Hopefully that's a fun one. I'm working on editing it right now.
We'll have to put that up as soon as we can.
Yeah, that's when it's going to take a little while.
Okay, yeah. Nobody's Fool, one of my favorite movies of all time. It's actually showing at the fest. This is the Robert Benton film with Paul Newman, Bruce Willis, and Jessica Tandy, among others. One of my favorite movies. It's actually one of the closing films they're showing today. So I was very pleased that one of my favorite movies is on the schedule. So thank you. Thank you to Karim Krobog, the director of War Child. This is a similar in theme to Slingshot Hip Hop. War Child is a film about a... Sudanese child soldier who survived that experience and ended up becoming a rap artist by the name of Emmanuel Jal. Very, very powerful film, very gut-wrenching film. The scenes where Jal is talking to high school students about his experience, and they ask him very loaded questions like, what is it like to kill someone? And you see Jal on stage, just so powerful, very inspiring, very wrenching stuff, I gotta say. That one definitely stayed with me as well. The Great Buck Howard. I really like this film. This is a very little film that hasn't found like a major release yet. All-star cast. John Malkovich plays the Great Buck Howard, this guy who used to be a very famous psychic or mentalist who used to appear on The Tonight Show way back in the day. He's like well past his prime, and he hires this young guy played by Colin Hanks to help him go on a comeback trail, and he basically is like touring all these little towns and doing these one-night-only concert shows. It co-stars Emily Blunt, Tom Hanks, has an all-star cast. It's really good. It's very light, and I think that's one of the reasons that it hasn't found, you know, a distributor who's, you know, willing to put it out there yet. Or if they have, they've just been kind of sitting on it. But yeah, it's very good, very really fascinating movie. That's really stayed with me. Wendy and Lucy. This was an interesting one. Michelle Williams starred in this film, in which she plays a woman whose car breaks down in the middle of this town. She's basically flat broke, and it's about how she and her dog have to get out of this town, and they're like stuck in this town. After about half an hour of this movie, I wanted to get out of this town too. I mean, the movie, and I mean that in a good way, the movie really makes you feel her isolation and being stuck. And Williams is fantastic. It's a
very cool.
Yeah, very gut-wrenching movie. And just a couple more. Cook County, directed by David Pohms. This is a gut-wrenching movie, horrifying film about a meth lab kind of hidden in the American heartland. The performances are very real. I really felt like I was not watching actors. I haven't seen any of the films about meth labs. I can't imagine them being any more powerful than this one. This one really is disturbing stuff, and apparently that's going to be coming out soon. And then finally, a movie I wanted to save, one of the best for last, Daniel Adoni's Playing Columbine. First of all, thank you, Danny. I made a new friend of the fest. very, very sweet guy. He was very kind to talk to me, and apparently he might be up for an interview coming soon. Very cool. So we'll talk about all that. But his film, Playing Columbine, this is Daniel Adoni, the gentleman who came up with the game Super Columbine Massacre RPG! Exclamation point. Of course, I don't even need to talk about it. This is a very controversial game that he came up with, and after seeing the film, I still have very mixed feelings about his game. But you know what? The film really presents his side of the story. It is him address. It's the film deals with him addressing his critics, addressing the issue of violence in video games overall, and the different games like his. You know, just in the terms of them being violent video games based on historical events. Yeah, this is a very thorough, very well-rounded, extremely well-made, and very passionately done documentary. I was very impressed, and very, very impressed with him in general, but I really, really liked his film. So definitely want to give a shout-out to that.
Cool.
And finally, a movie I did not like at all. I think this is worth noting. I really did not like Jennifer Lynch's movie Surveillance. I really didn't, but the dang thing has stayed with me.
This is the Bill Paxton.
Bill Pullman film. Yeah. I really just did not like it, but man, it has really haunted me. It has one of the sickest twist endings, and it's played with such conviction, and it is such a nasty piece of work. And you know what? For a lot of people, that's exactly what they want from this film. And I gotta say, it's an ugly movie, but it's extremely well made, and it has certainly haunted me. So.
Okay then.
Yeah, so I just had to throw that in there.
Fair enough. So the one you wanted to see but didn't get a chance to was Brothers Bloom, right?
Yeah, I did not get to see Brothers Bloom. Didn't get to see Chocolate. There are a few.
Okay.
But yeah, for the most part, you know, I got to see.
You had a full bit of week on top of working and.
Yeah, quite the plate for the last 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Now if we were doing this full time, sure, it's easy to go see more movies, but. To do what you did on top of teaching class and everything else, that's wow.
Well, it was fun. And, you know, the nice thing is a lot of these documentaries, a lot of these movies were pretty short.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, I only named about 15. I ended up, you know, there's a little 15 I'm not even going to mention. But yeah, a lot of movies, thankfully, most of them are pretty short. So even at the festival, it's like they're really easy to catch these films because some of them are, you know, they're in bite-sized bits in terms of running time.
Most definitely.
So
cool. Well, our thanks to the folks up at the Denver Film Festival.
Yes. Thank you again, Keith, Alexis, Rachel, and Elizabeth at the Denver Film Society. Thank you so much. I can't wait till next year.
Yes. And hopefully we'll be up next year doing a bit more coverage for us as well. And
yes.
Go from there. I guess that's good enough for now. That's a heck of a thorough wrap-up, sir.
Yeah.
Been a busy man.
Yeah, well, you know, you were there, so you know how much fun it is. And
yeah.
I mean, I guess for a second we just talk about the atmosphere. I mean, I love it because it's
so laid back.
It's so laid back. I mean, there's a lot of people, but it never feels claustrophobic. I never feel like, you know, it's like a bunch of angry people. It's a bunch of happy, mellow film buffs, just happy to be there. I know one thing that Keith said, and we might relay this in the interview later. Keith Garcia, the programming director, was telling me that because none of these movies are, you know, they're all paid for, they're all taken care of, most of them have distributors, so it's like they're just, these filmmakers are just there to show these movies because they love film. It's not like Sundance or other film festivals, you know, where it's like a big bidding war. They're just there to have fun.
That's cool.
You know, and obviously the audience has a great time too.
Most definitely, yes. Yeah. And it's very laid back. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, I want to go next year, for sure.
Yeah, so November of next year, everybody needs to go.
Heck yeah. All right, let's talk about what's hitting theaters this week. See if anything dethroned Twilight.
Well, let's see. Opening on Wednesday, you've got Baz Luhrmann's long-awaited new epic, Australia, starring Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman.
Very mixed reviews.
Very mixed, yes. Dave is not a fan. Four Christmases with Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn. The question is, will it be better than Fred Claus? That is the question.
I don't know. I look at this trailer and I just cringe.
I think it's better than the Fred Claus trailer, though. I'll say that much.
The second Fred Claus trailer. The first one
was very promising.
Yes.
And then we actually see what the movie's about. It's like, oh, it's really not about him just in... This is not Vince Vaughn and Paul Giamatti singing on a couch. There's actually a movie there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what they called it, at least, with a movie. Okay.
Speaking of a possible Oscar contender, Transporter 3, starring Jason Statham.
There you go.
Will it be better than 2?
Have you seen 2 yet?
Not yet, no.
And you're seeing 3 this week, right?
Seeing 3 very soon, yes.
Okay.
And then a limited release, Sean Penn as Harvey Milk in Milk.
Which you need to wait to talk about that, right?
Yeah, unfortunately,
okay, I gotta wait
to talk. No, and Australia, too. I can't talk about Australia. But but I haven't seen Four Christmases or Transporters 3. Yeah, and this isn't even a criticism of these movies, but because these are really specialized audiences, other than something like Four Christmases, which has wide appeal, I can't see any of these movies
to throw
in Twilight.
They're definitely niche films.
Yeah, because like Four Christmases, you know, it's PG-13, right? So like you'll get like the comedy family audience, so we'll probably go to that. Australia, because of the mixed reviews and because, you know, it's an Aussie Western, that's very niche, although I hope the movie does well. Transporter 3, again, like that's the action movie crowd. And Milk, you know, that's the art house crowd. Yeah. So it's almost a little bit of everything, and that's the problem with this season. You know, everybody starts to kind of cannibalize each other's box office.
Yeah.
So
except for okay. Oh, but it cannibalizes. Ha ha ha.
Ah,
sorry. Yes. Okay. What's hitting DVD next week?
DVD next week.
That hurt. I'm sorry.
It's okay. The Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian.
There's like a 1 in 3 disc, right?
Boy, yeah, single disc and a 3-disc collector's edition. Yep.
Which, let me guess what's on the third disc.
A coaster!
Possibly. Yeah. I'm hoping not, because the special edition, no, it's going to be that, because we didn't get a 4-disc edition of Narnia until like 6 months after the initial one, and the original one was a 2-disc. So yeah, third disc is a coaster. Okay.
All right. Not worth the money, folks. Wanted with Angelina Jolie and James McAvoy and Morgan Freeman. Who would have thought we'd ever see these three together in a movie? Available in regular and, I guess, 2-disc special edition for that one.
Cool.
Same thing with Step Brothers, regular and unrated special edition. So you get even more of Will Ferrell's junk because the movie needed so much more of that. One of my favorite movies of the summer, which didn't get seen. Nobody saw it. I liked it. X-Files, I Want to Believe, available in 3-disc special edition, the 1-disc edition, and Blu-ray.
Cool.
So lots of X-Files out there. And in fact, they actually got the special edition of Fight the Future. And
that's right, they're re-releasing it.
Yeah, and like you could either get it separately or all together.
Yeah, and you're doing the second one, aren't you? You're getting both.
Yeah, I like those movies. I do. I love X-Files. Also, Saturday Night Live Season 4, very cool. The original, The Day the Earth Stood Still in Blu-ray. Also on Blu-ray, not the greatest Christmas movie of all time, Arnold Schwarzenegger in Jingle All the Way.
Because I want to see Sinbad in high def.
Or James Belushi as Santa Claus.
Oh.
That was a sorry movie.
Really?
You know who else is in that movie? Do you remember?
No.
One of your favorite actors from Star Wars. Do you remember?
No.
Jake Lloyd is the little boy. He's the little boy who wants to.
I've never
Turbo
seen
Man.
The movie.
Oh,
I've
never seen it.
And I'm not going to now.
Yeah, don't ever see it.
No.
I thought you had seen it. Okay.
Oh, no. I've seen like little bits on TV, and as soon as I figured out what it is, I changed the channel.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, just see the trailer. That sums up the whole movie.
Yeah.
The whole movie. It's them running around. I want the Turbo Man. It's so bad. Casablanca, special edition on Blu-ray. This is nice.
This I have to get.
Yeah.
It's essentially the 2-disc edition that I already have, but it comes with a passport and. It's just so insanely cool.
Passport.
Yes.
Not a real passport, though.
No, but it's like...
Okay.
Yeah. $40 for a passport. No.
This isn't like Superbad when I had that McLovin Hawaii's driver's license that was so controversial.
No.
Because apparently people in Hawaii were like trying to...
You're kidding me.
You didn't hear about that? Yeah, it was very controversial. In fact, there's a few people who have boycotted the film because it came out with that special edition with the McLovin driver's license, and apparently they
people
had a problem with why.
Yeah, in.
Exactly. They were trying to make them come off as real driver's licenses in Hawaii. Yeah.
That's funny.
So, well, not to the people of Hawaii. But
okay, fair
to
enough.
Us Howleys on the mainland, yes, very funny. But yeah, so... Interesting, a passport. Does it look like an old passport? Does it like have Rick on it?
I'm not entirely certain. It just comes with a lot of really cool stuff, and we're getting it. That's all I know, because I love this
interesting
movie.
If like people try to pull that off here, like...
No, I'm sure it's like looks like an old passport.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The 3D movie that somehow managed to make money and play in a few theaters, even though I hear it's terrible, and the non-3D version is coming on DVD. That's Fly Me to the Moon. And then, wow, talk about ending on a sour note. Directed by Fred Durst, starring Ice Cube, The Long Shots. Man, that was like in theaters like last month, wasn't it?
Well, you know, when people think Ice Cube and Fred Durst frontman for Limp Bizkit, the last thing they were thinking of was a kiddie little...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even see any trailers for this on TV.
Oh, I saw a trailer for it and it looked...
Because, you know, I'll be honest.
Stupid.
I like Ice Cube, but... Yeah, when I heard that, you know, he's got to get out of those kiddie comedies. So he could really act.
Yeah, absolutely. But, yeah. You know,
sad.
Who knew we were going to have.
Sorry to end on that, that note. Okay, gosh. Then.
Now that I can actually play the voicemail all the way through, we can listen to a voicemail from Billy Flynn. It's a couple weeks old. I do apologize, sir. But it's still a good one. So, yeah, let's go ahead and play it now.
Gentlemen, Gremlin, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Oh, my God, what great movies. Okay, here's the deal. I didn't get to tell you this part the last time I left an email, voicemail. You know what I'm saying. Movies. Here's why Gremlins didn't scare me. Because I was watching slasher flicks when this came out. I was just 84. I was 12. I was 12 years old when this movie came out, and I'm watching slasher flicks. I had already seen... Psycho by this point. I found Psycho, like most things, once cable. Oh my God, we have cable. When I got cable in like the 6th grade, 7th grade, changed my freaking life, dude. I saw movies I'd only heard about, but I'd read. You're talking about your favorite horror movies there at the end. Brad had asked you that question, and Lord help me, Barry, you mentioned Howling 2. Your sister is a werewolf. The first movie that I ever know of for a fact that was released on video before it was released in theaters, because I saw it, rented it, watched it, and then it showed up in my local movie theater 2 weeks later. It is, without a doubt, one of the worst things you will ever, ever see. Christopher Lee is in this movie, and all the fun and just creepiness that's in the original Howling. All the playing around with the werewolf legend and how things are, all the clever things, just right out the freaking window. I mean, they show footage, right, from the first story with Dee Wallace Stone changing, but it's not her. They couldn't afford to show the actual sequence from the earlier film. They had to reshoot a flashback. That's stupid. Christopher Lee embarrassing his ass off in this movie because he is the great werewolf hunter and knows that the werewolves from the last movie, that they're not really dead because they use silver bullets. And these werewolves, you have to use titanium. Aside from the werewolf orgy that starts off as a normal person orgy and ends up as a werewolf orgy, and we get to see the transformation scene, other than that, and the fact that apparently you can make some kind of holy candles and make and like take the wax from them and make like earplugs so the werewolf howl doesn't kill you. Aside from those two things, this is an easily and completely forgettable film. Probably the worst in all of the many Howling ripoffs, sequels. Although I got to say, Howling 4: The Marsupials came damn second. So. Because it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to do a show about horror movies this year, my quick list for you. My favorite vampire film is The Lost Boys. It just is. For my money, the best vampire movie that's ever been made. No, seriously. I saw The Hunger. I saw Vampire's Kiss. I enjoyed them both. I love them. But no, that's my favorite. As far as a werewolf, dude, I mean, Dave hit that. American Werewolf in London, easily. Of course, Lon Chaney, the Wolfman, fantastic for old school stuff. Old school. The Howling, though, damn, gotta give love to The Howling. That might be actually a better, I don't know. Anyway, let's move on. My favorite zombie movie? Yeah, my favorite zombie movie is Night of the Living Dead. Return of the Living Dead, I love it. But my favorite zombie movie, Night of the Living Dead, no one's ever done it better. Favorite overall horror movie is probably, God, Dave, you're like, seriously, man, we were separated at birth. Yeah, John Carpenter's the thing. There's just simply, oh, it's great. It's perfect. It's fantastic. It's scary. It's funny. It's everything that movies nowadays try to be. And it looks better than they do, too. Screw CGI. Who needs that? Also, mad love, Don Coscarelli's Phantasm. Phantasm is quite easily the most disturbing, I don't know what's going on, but yet I think I sort of do. No movie has ever, in my mind, captured a dream state feel to Don Coscarelli's Phantasm. It's so much better than Beastmaster, which was a bunch of poo. Just a bunch of poo. That's what it was, a bunch of poo. Okay. Horror movies. I guess that's all I got to say about horror movies, other than I love horror movies. I've seen pretty much every horror movie there is, and yeah, things don't really scare you when you laugh. Things are creepy. Oh, let me give out a quick shout-out, sorry guys, to Event Horizon. I know, you don't like Paul, I know, but Event Horizon is a movie my friends came back, well, I was in the military when this happened. They came back and was like, dude, we just saw this movie, come on, you gotta go. So we went back and I saw it with them again. I watched Event Horizon. Event Horizon is a flawed film. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But Event Horizon is unsettling in a way that I don't know why it is. I thought about that movie for 2 days after seeing it to determine whether or not I really liked it, and I have determined that Event Horizon bugs me on some level. It, like, creeps me out on some weird level. It gets underneath your skin in that kind of primal fear kind of way, and I don't know why, but it works. It works really, really well. Oh, and Barry, thank you. I'm glad that you like Exorcist 3. Exorcist 3 is amazing. Exorcist 3 is one of the greatest horror movies ever made. George C. Scott is amazing. Brad Dourif, who I was luckily enough to meet at Dragon Con, is amazing. When I think of the Joker, but well, obviously before Heath Ledger, when I thought of the Joker, I thought of Brad Dourif's performance in Exorcist 3, because that is the kind of grounded, weird, creepy, and charm, I don't know, it just works. It really, 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 really works. Also, for those of you that horror movies, here's one you probably haven't seen, and I promise I'm going to leave after this. I'm going to shut my silly, silly mouth. A horror movie that you really desperately need to see is Todd Browning's Freaks. I don't know that you'd call it a horror movie in the traditional sense. It is creepy and unsettling, and not for the reasons they want you to think it is. Barry, I'm sure you teach this about, you know, I'm sure you teach Todd Browning's Freaks. I'm sure that you do. So I don't have to say anything about it because, sir, by all means, take it. That movie is disturbing. God, I can't even talk about how disturbing that movie is. Yes. Oh, and Monster Squad. You have to watch Monster Squad every Halloween. Yeah. So I'm going to shut up now. So later, guys.
Happy Halloween, ladies.
And our thanks to Billy Flynn for that.
Wow.
Even though it's delayed. Much to talk about. I need to see Freaks because I love Dracula, and Todd Browning directed that too, so I have to see it at some point.
It's unsettling, that's for sure. I'm not a big fan just because it is clearly an exploitation movie, but it does have some of the most iconic and horrific imagery. When the snake guy has the knife in his mouth and he's wriggling around through the rain, that is the stuff of nightmares, truly. A few other things to comment there. Thank you, Billy. That was like an epic voicemail. I appreciate that. Phantasm versus Beastmaster. I'm sorry, man. I got to go with Beastmaster. Two words, Tanya Roberts, man. Tanya Roberts. That was like one of my 80s fantasies.
You know, I think Tanya Roberts fantasies. And I think of the radio commercials for the hotels in Vegas.
Oh, gosh, that awful thing. Yeah, I've heard that a few times. They sort of put it off like it's real. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, Howling 2, I've never seen it. I don't know how the heck I got to talking about it. But Howling 2, I want to see that. That's it's in the $5 bin now at Walmart, so I got to pick up some Howling 2.
I want to bring up Event Horizon because, yes, I'm not a Paul Watt-Script Anderson fan at all, but I'm always quick to point out that Event Horizon freaked me the hell out. Because I've said this as well. I rented it, watched it at home with the lights off, home alone. Stupidest thing I ever could have done. But yeah, it's a good jacked up movie.
It's unsettling, and Sam Neill is great in that film.
Yeah,
he really is.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying screw CGI. That should be like we should put that on a T-shirt, Billy. I mean, seriously, you can make some serious money. It's just screw CGI.
We should talk to the Kingfish over at Geek Label and see if they can do that.
Yeah. Seriously. And then last thing I want to say, I appreciate the shout out about Cable Boy. it didn't even matter what it was, when that HBO theme used to come on. Do you remember this?
Oh, yeah. I didn't have cable until I was like in junior high, but I went to a friend's house who had Select TV.
Yeah.
Which is like the first cable. Now, all you young whippersnappers who have no idea what I'm talking about. I shouldn't be saying whippersnappers at 31, but still.
But no. Like, seriously, whenever they did that, like, that little short movie where you're, like, flying through, like, the town and the city, and then, like, the big shiny HBO is in the sky, it's like, I don't even care if it's, like, Superman 3. I'll watch it. So
Superman 4, not so much?
You know, I like Superman 4 better than 3.
Okay, that's going to be a discussion for another day.
That's definitely a discussion right there.
We should do one for the Superman movies.
Yeah, we really should.
Okay, if you'd like to shoot us an email, by all means do. You can hit us at podcast, Barry, Ethan, Josh, or Dave at screengeeks.com. I'm moving Ethan up the list every week just for the heck of it. I'm just kind of cycling him around.
Climbing the ladder.
Yes, our voicemail line is down right now, but we will have it back up here shortly. And yeah, I guess that's about it. What, we found a way to crank it at just about an hour.
Wow. So, even with Billy Flynn's rant.
Yes, indeed.
That's great.
So until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Take it easy.